Welcome back, everyone, to Zephaniah chapter 3. Zephaniah's intense preaching has urgently called Judah's humble remnant to come together in united action in a last-ditch effort to rescue the nation from impending doom. Will it be enough? Already, Zephaniah has seen the coming day of devastation circling over Judah's violent and idolatrous neighbors like a vulture waiting to feast on the dead. At the end of chapter 2, we were left with Nineveh, capital city of the mighty Assyrian Empire, destined to become utterly desolate, like a skeleton picked clean. Now Zephaniah shifts from dire warnings to a pronouncement of woe on the city of oppressors. Listen for the new resignation in Zephaniah's tone. It's like a doctor telling family that treatment plans have failed. The time for hospice and funeral planning has come. Let's pick up in verse 1. Woe to the city of oppressors, rebellious and defiled. This city has polluted herself by oppressing others. Nothing could be more true of Nineveh, a city that built its wealth by brutalizing others. Zephaniah is clear that this kind of rebellion is against the Lord's plan to bless the nations. It does nothing but defile and destroy nations who participate in it. He continues in verse 2. She obeys no one. She accepts no correction. She does not trust in the Lord. She does not draw near to her God. But wait a minute. Who is this city of oppressors? Did you catch what Zephaniah's just done? He's turned the tables on us. He says she does not trust in the Lord. She does not draw near to her God. The Assyrians worship Asher. There's only one city, the capital of one nation, who can claim the Lord as its God, Jerusalem. And Zephaniah says she obeys no one and accepts no correction. Jerusalem has refused to draw near to her God. This is not good. We don't know how much time has passed between Zephaniah's sermons, between his message in chapter 2 and this one in chapter 3. But this statement of Zephaniah's fills us with dread. We feel its implications in our bones. In spite of Josiah's valiant efforts to rally the righteous, to rescue both his people and his nation, read about all that. Read about all this amazing king did in 2 Kings 22 and 23. It's summed up with this incredible epitaph. Neither before nor after Josiah was there a king like him who turned to the Lord as he did, with all his heart and with all his soul and with all his strength, in accordance with all the law of Moses. In spite of heroic, courageous efforts of the young king, the political and religious leaders have refused the Lord's offer of forgiveness and life. They have refused to draw near to their God. Listen as the Lord describes them in verse 3. Her officials within her are roaring lions. Her rulers are evening wolves who leave nothing for the morning. Her government leaders, did you notice how they're described? Zephaniah calls them lions and wolves. What does that mean? What else but that they use their positions to get rich, to serve themselves while they eat Jerusalem's people for lunch. Verse 4, her prophets are unprincipled. They are treacherous people. Her priests profane the sanctuary and do violence to the law. This is devastating. Like cancer that has metastasized, the problem is pervasive and systemic. It's not just Judah's government leaders, it's her prophets, those who are supposed to speak truth to power, and her priests, who should instruct in righteousness, but instead twist the law for their own gain. And all this in shocking contrast to the Lord their God. Listen to Zephaniah in verse 5. The Lord within her is righteous. He does no wrong. Morning by morning, he dispenses his justice, and every new day he does not fail. Yet the unrighteous know no shame. This is brazen, in-your-face rebellion. A blatant rejection of the Lord and all that he holds dear. But do you hear the tone? The Lord sounds heartbroken, mystified at their refusal to trust in him. The Lord has destroyed nations. Their cities are laid waste, left deserted and empty. But he says, "Of Jerusalem I thought, surely you will fear me and accept correction. Then her place of refuge would not be destroyed, nor all my punishments come upon her." Can you feel the pain in the Lord's heart? He's deeply grieved, just like he was before the flood. He wants to live with his people, to enjoy the good creation that he's made. He's been patient to instruct, to correct, to warn. He holds out to them safety and refuge. But what of Judah? Verse 7. But they were still eager to act corruptly in all they did. Like Denethor, steward of Gondor, they're poisoned against their calling. To be God's own people, a light to the nations. And instead, they're shutting their ears to instruction, pouring oil on their own funeral pyre. Verse 8. Therefore, wait for me, declares the Lord. I will stand up to testify. Imagine that. The Lord, in whose presence everything is laid bare, is testifying against Judah and the nations about their sins. Terrifying. I have decided to assemble the nations. The whole world will be consumed by the fire of my jealous anger. We're stunned. It's so catastrophic. What do we do with this horrifying language? Isn't jealousy bad? Will the Lord really consume the whole world? In terror, we almost imagine the Lord as King George in Hamilton singing, da 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 da. Has the Lord gone mad? When push comes to shove, will the Lord really kill Judah's friends and family to remind them of his love? But no, wrong story. Remember for a minute what these people are doing. Violence and injustice, they're all in, if it lines their own pockets. Twisting the truth, sure, if they can profit personally from those lies. Loving goodness, loving neighbor, bah, that's for the weak. Their idols require sex as worship, and demand child sacrifice as kindling to do them good. It's not safe to live here, especially for women, for children, for the poor. No one can flourish. And suddenly we see it. This isn't Hamilton, it's Lord of the Rings. The Lord is jealous, like Pippin to rescue Faramir, a pawn played to satisfy a father's foolish pride, now too weak from battle wounds even to cry out, set to burn to satiate his father's twisted love. Like Pippin, the Lord will not stand by and let the powerful set aflame the weak. Violently pulling Faramir from the pyre, Pippin cannot restrain the greater conflagration. Denethor, like the leaders of Judah, goes running, flaming, to his death. And so, Gandalf pronounces, passes Denethor, son of Ecthelion. And so, we can hear the Lord say, passes Judah, son of Jacob. Out of this horror, with the rescued Faramirs, remember what Zephaniah called them in chapter 2, the humble of the land. With them, the Lord can rebuild a nation and all nations, where the Lord can live with his people and all people can flourish. Hear God's heart and his plans for them after their world falls apart. Verse 9. Then I will purify the lips of the peoples, that all of them may call on the name of the Lord and serve him shoulder to shoulder. God will use this judgment to purge people of lies, of idolatrous worship and corrupt lifestyle, and to rebuild nations of peoples into a unified community that serves the Lord. On that day, you, Jerusalem, will not be put to shame. Listen to the amazing transformation that the Lord plans for his people. I will remove from you your arrogant boasters. I will leave within you the meek and humble, The remnant of Israel will trust in the name of the Lord. They will tell no lies. No one will make them afraid. This is incredible. Hope for the remnant, for those who will trust in the Lord. Deliverance not just from Assyria, but from the wicked among their own people. What a shift in tone. Listen to verse 15. The Lord has taken away your punishment. He's turned back your enemy. The Lord your God is with you, the mighty warrior who saves. And now, can you hear it? Singing, joyful singing. He will take great delight in you. In his love, he will rejoice over you with singing. Listen, it's a love song. Rejoicing in the faithful, sung by the Lord. I will rescue the lame. I will gather the exiles. I will gather you. I will bring you home. When I restore your fortunes before your very eyes, says the Lord. Did you notice Zephaniah stack up the promises? Like building blocks for their future. Punishment ended. Their enemy turned back. Rescued. Gathered. Brought home. The Lord's delight. Overflowing love. Joy that bubbles up in song. Even in the midst of disaster and devastation, the Lord has given the humble this joy-filled love song to sing when the night is dark. And now we understand the vision that gripped Josiah and sustained the faithful of the land through desperate times. An urgent call to action before the end of their world? Absolutely. But also, the promise of a new world prepared by the Lord for them. What about you? Is the Lord calling you to urgent action? To rescue individuals? A family? A city? Or a nation? How you respond matters. To your future? For their future? But what will sustain you through the dark nights of devastation and loss? Listen carefully. Can you hear the Lord's love song? Can you sense his joyous delight? These are the building blocks of your future and of God's future for his good world. Read Zephaniah 3 and be sure to make the Lord's joy-filled love song your very own.
Join us next time as we continue the journey one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing and hearing through the word.